Voices. I'm your host, William Seaman, and unfortunately, very unfortunately, my usual co-host, my partner in One Land, Many Voices, Hala Gores, is not here this morning. I'm flying solo. But how can you fly solo with community radio? You always have the family here. You have the listeners, of course, our listener-sponsored. Sponsors, thanks so much, everybody, for your pledges a little while ago. Please remember to send those pledges in. We are going to be talking about a number of topics coming up, a number of events coming up here in Portland. We're going to start off with an interview with Stephen Zunis. Stephen Zunis is professor of politics and is the author of scores of articles for scholarly and general readership on Middle Eastern politics, U.S. foreign policy, international terrorism, social movements, and human rights. He's principal editor of the Nonviolent Social Movements, out from Blackwell Publishers. And he's the author of the highly acclaimed Tinderbox, U.S. Middle East Policy and the Roots of Terrorism, out from Common Courage Press. He also has forthcoming the book Western Sahara, Nationalism and Conflict in Northwest Africa. That's from Syracuse University Press. Now, before we go to this interview, I want to mention what the topic is, and that is a very for us, I think, here in the Portland area, an unprecedented event. Over in Vancouver, Washington, there's going to be a conference, and this conference is titled Convergence Northwest. You can find out more if you want to find out more from the source of this conference at their website, which is convergencenw.org. Now, this looks to be a gathering of some of the most extreme right-wing elements from both the Israeli and U.S. political landscape. And as you can guess, the conference organizers are saying that this is about educating Americans, in particular Oregon and Southwest Washington leaders, about the threat of terrorism, and more specifically, about the alliance between Israel and the United States in this fight against terrorism. I began by asking Professor Zunis about if he had heard about this conference, and if this was something new in American politics.
Well, this is the first I've heard about this particular kind of gathering that's focused on a regional level outside of the Washington Beltway. But this effort to try to link the Israeli right-wing agenda of colonizing and annexing large parts of Arab territory seized in the 1967 war with the struggle around international terrorism and the threat from al-Qaeda, groups like that, that this efforts of convergence of bringing those elements together is certainly something that quite a number of right-wing Republican lawmakers and their supporters have attempted to do in the past with the active cooperation of right-wing elements within Israeli politics.
And I wonder, what do you think the intentions are of this conference? Of course, they say this is education because they think the American people simply don't understand the true nature and character of the threat of terrorism, and more specifically, again, the role of this alliance between the U.S. and Israel in battling terrorism. But what do you think the intentions of this conference actually are?
Well, it is definitely to try to influence lawmakers through the American public into supporting policies that most Americans, out of respect for international law and human rights and enlightened self-interest, would not otherwise support. They are trying basically to equate efforts by Palestinians to free themselves from foreign military occupation with the efforts by mega-terrorists like Al-Qaeda and the like to attack the United States. And even though terrorism for any purpose, whether it is trying to free oneself from a military occupation or some broader jihadist goal, is wrong, I mean, terrorism can never be justified, that mixing these two elements is a great distortion of the process. And it, what I think tends to support the very misguided policies of both Netanyahu when he was prime minister and President Bush today, in believing that conquest and repression are the ways to deal with terrorism, when in fact it's just those kind of policies that help provoke terrorism.
Well, let's talk specifically about some of these speakers that they have lined up. I read in the Oregonian coverage of this conference that Netanyahu might not actually be there. He might participate perhaps by video link. But could you tell our listeners, remind our listeners of the history of Benjamin Netanyahu, and also how he is essentially waiting in the wings with the Olmert government so very weak, and the likelihood that there will be a change of leadership in Israel, that this is not some game of history. Netanyahu is a key player today, and what has his role been in the past?
It's been quite interesting. Netanyahu actually lived in the United States for the better part of a decade. He became a U.S. citizen before he came back to Israel to become active in right-wing politics. It's rumored that he had close associations with certain intelligence agencies here on this side of the Atlantic, and indeed has been very close to the big advocate of close U.S.-Israeli strategic cooperation. As Prime Minister, he basically tried to scuttle the Oslo Accords. He was very much opposed to the efforts by former Prime Minister Yitzhak Rabin to make peace with the Palestinians and other Arab neighbors. He dramatically increased Israel's colonization efforts in the West Bank to make a viable, contiguous Palestinian state physically impossible. He tried to extend the areas of Israeli control beyond what was promised in the phased redeployment of his predecessors. And he even split with Ariel Sharon, the right-wing former general, considered by many to be a war criminal for actions he took as defense minister and as an army officer and in Lebanon and Jordan and in Gaza Strip in previous decades. He thought Sharon was actually too soft by agreeing to withdraw illegal Israeli settlements from Gaza Strip and from allowing the Palestinians some form of autonomy in parts of the West Bank. He essentially believes that Israel should be able to hold on to all this territory in violation of the United Nations Charter, which forbids any country from expanding its territory by military force, and contrary to UN Security Council Resolutions 242 and 338, long seen as the basis of Middle East peace, and which, in return for security guarantees from its neighbors, Israel will withdraw from the territory seized in the 1967 war.
I wonder if you could go into that history a little deeper in terms of the vision that people like Benjamin Netanyahu, and we'll get to some of the other speakers who are going to be taking part in this conference in Vancouver at the beginning of June, their views as well, but their vision of what has been referred to as a greater Israel.
Well, basically, supporters of this vision, which include prominent Republican politicians here in the United States, basically negates the post-World War II notion that it's illegal to expand a nation's boundaries by military force, that this idea of right of conquest is something that most people see as having gone out with the 19th century, that simply because you have the ability to defeat neighboring armies and seize their territory doesn't mean that it should become part of your country. I mean, that's what the Gulf War was supposedly fought about in 1991, following Iraq's conquest of Kuwait. And after a long, many years of efforts by church groups and human rights groups, Indonesia finally withdrew from East Timor after illegally conquering and gobbling up that territory. You know, there are a couple other places in the world, most notably, I guess, Morocco's occupation of Western Sahara that still have not been resolved. But the main one is Israel's ongoing occupation of the Golan Heights in the south western Syria, and the and large parts of the West Bank. While Israeli troops have largely withdrawn from the Gaza Strip, that's still under quasi-occupation because it's essentially under siege. The Israelis will not allow them to open their border crossings into Egypt. They are without very strict management from the Israeli side. They not allow them to reopen their seaport or their airport or anything like that. So in many ways, Gaza Strip remains occupied as well. But basically, the idea behind this is that Israel, either by right of conquest or by some more fundamentalist Jews, the idea of fulfilling some biblical promises, has this right to control vast Arab lands that were seized by military force. They've gotten an interesting alliance with certain right-wing Christian fundamentalists who believe that chapter 15 in Genesis should be the basis of any kind of settlement. That Senator Inhofe, senior senator from Oklahoma, said this was settled in the book of Genesis. This is about whether God's word is really should be honored. This is not a matter of international law. This is not a matter of negotiations or anything like that. And there are tens of millions of Americans who really believe this sincerely, who see God is not as a God of justice, but some kind of cosmic real estate agent who gets to decide, you know, which people gets to have which lands. And so the Israeli right has made alliance with many elements within the Christian right to try to justify Israel's takeover of a large amount of Arab land in which people have lived in and farmed and for many, many centuries, and turn it into a part of greater Israel with the backing of the American taxpayer.
Now, this is the so-called Christian Zionism mm-hmm. that we hear more and more about in recent years. But I wonder, there seem to be two elements of this. You were citing passages from Genesis, and I wonder if maybe you'd make that more concrete to those of us, those of our listeners as well, who are not as familiar with the biblical citations that you're referring to. But the other end of that timeline is the so-called end times, in which Israel is also purported to play a role. And I wonder if you could talk about, if you could bridge those two elements of this Christian Zionist ideology.
Well, yeah, basically there's this kind of millennialist idea that the ingathering of Jews into the Holy Land after years of exile would be one of the harbingers of the coming of the Messiah. Now, even Bible-believing Christians, many would argue that they're referring to the return from the Babylonian exile and Jesus Christ coming. This is not in reference to Jews coming back a third time and the second coming taking place. There's also this also the sense of the promises to Abraham and his descendants, which also, of course, include today's modern-day Arabs, who like the Jews, are descended from these early tribes of that territory. So even if one does take the Bible literally, one doesn't necessarily have to buy into this this notion of the dominant nation state of Israel being necessary for the fulfillment of biblical prophecy or for the second coming. But this particular branch does indeed see the modern Israel and Israel's control of that territory, and some would say even the rebuilding of the second temple on what is now the site of the Dome of the Rock and the Al-Aqsa Mosque is necessary for Christ's coming. But interesting thing about this ideology, this theology, is that when Christ does come again, if the Jews don't immediately have not converted, they are doomed to eternal damnation. So it's kind of an anti-Semitic theology in many respects. They want to use the Jews for Act 1, but not for Act 2. That they essentially want to fight the Muslims to the last Jew. This is not one that really, frankly, cares about Israel's best interest. in terms of its national security and the like, which would require a territorial compromise of the Palestinians, a withdrawal to the 67 borders, a recognizing a viable Palestinian state alongside Israel. And this is what would be best for Israel's security, because this is what most of the terrorism and isolation and threats against Israel really are all about. But these folks really aren't interested in Israel's long-term security interests because they want to see this apocalyptic occurrence, which even in their own vision would be very bad for the Jewish people. And even if you don't believe this in the second coming, this kind of policy is going to be very bad for the Jewish people because it keeps pushing Israel to continue its self-destructive policies of occupation and colonization and repression, which have created this Islamist resurgence and the real threat that Israel's facing today. I mean, I think it's important to note that Hamas, Islamic Jihad, all those groups didn't exist until after years of Israeli occupation and the failure of the peace process to make a settlement that would allow the Palestinians freedom and a viable state.
Well, I wonder if we could talk about the significance of this Christian Zionist movement, the alliance between Christian fundamentalists here in the United States and essentially the most extreme right-wing elements of Israeli society and the Israeli political landscape. The Christian fundamentalist communities here in the United States do not reflect a significant part of the population here, and yet they appear to have influence beyond their numbers. And can you talk a little bit about that and maybe provide some insight into why this community is playing such a prominent role with respect to this issue?
Actually, Christian fundamentalists are a fairly significant proportion of the population, a good 40, 50 million at least. Not all subscribe to this millennial theology that I was referring to, but quite a number do. And they're particularly influential in terms of the Republican Party. They essentially control the Republican Party in quite a few states and have a lot of influence in the current administration. I've documented two or three occasions, in fact, where President Bush began to push Israel on a couple of policy areas that where he thought Israel was going a bit too far. And then, within a few days, back down and essentially started endorsing the particular policy. And if you look at what happened the days in between, the Christian right-wing network mobilized through their radio and television broadcast from the pulpits and got hundreds of thousands of emails and other communications to the White House, really pushing them to back off on pressuring Israel, to allow Israel to proceed with the offensive in the spring of 2002 with the war on Lebanon this past summer, with a refusal to consider more territorial compromise when there was talk of resuming the peace talks. I mean, these had an impact on the Bush administration. In fact, I think it's fair to say, at least under Republicans, the Christian Zionists and their organizations, their networks, are even more powerful than the Jewish Zionists and AIPAC and the pro-Israel lobby.
Well, let's turn back to some of the people who are going to be speaking at this conference. I wonder if you could give us some insight into these players. I'm looking in particular at Dr. Aryeh Eldad, who is apparently a member of Avigdor Lieberman's party. And it'd be nice if perhaps you could talk a little bit about this Moledet party, which is a part of the National Union, and Avigdor Lieberman. This is a name that comes up time and again, but it's not clear to me that many people here in the United States know who these folks are.
Well, he's in the current Israeli cabinet. He's the vice premier. His position, his party's position, is essentially for ethnic cleansing, and basically to physically remove the Palestinian Arab population from both Israel, where Palestinians are a minority, albeit citizens of Israel, as well as the Palestinians in the occupied territories. And, this is a very, very, very extremist, racist ideologue, and that the very fact that the Israeli Prime Minister, Ehud Olmert, would give him such a prominent position in his cabinet is rather distressing. I mean, it's quite remarkable that the position of both the Republican and Democratic parties is that if the Palestine Authority has but one member of Hamas in the cabinet, that we won't talk to them, we will block any kind of assistance to them or anything like that. But you know, they allow somebody, you know, that had no problems with sending billions of dollars of aid to Israel when they have, you know, someone who's even more extreme as their vice premier. And indeed, Lieberman has justified acts of terrorism by some extremist Jewish groups in the occupied territories that have killed Palestinian civilians. This guy is pretty hardcore by any measure, and the fact that he's, you know, considered a respected figure who's given a visa to come to the United States to talk to groups such as this, whereas you know, even the most indirect association with Hamas makes you persona non grata, I think is indicative of the double standards and indeed the racism that you see within U.S. policy priorities.
Just to clarify, I don't think Avigdor Lieberman is speaking here, but Dr. Aryeh Eldad, who is a member of the same party. And just as you say, this is a party that explicitly calls for the expulsion of the non-Jewish population, in particular the Palestinian Arab population, within Israel. These are Israeli citizens that they are calling to have transferred out of the state of Israel. That's not an exaggeration.
No, not at all. This is very much a very extremist party, no question about it.
Now, would it be unfair to compare the character of their policies? I mean, if we look for a similar kind of political aggregation here, social aggregation here in the United States, I mean, one thinks of the KKK, the Ku Klux Klan.
Oh, very much so. Yeah, this is definitely a racist party. This is not, and they're not shy about it. It is it's about one's ethnic religious identity that, you know, gives you rights or does not give you rights, gives you permission to live on particular land and not. Yeah, this is no question. This is a very extremist party, comparable, again, to the white supremacists and others that we've seen in this country from time to time.
Well, now, with that in mind, I mean, something that's particularly disturbing, I think, for American Jews, especially, of course, progressive American Jews, is that we have members of the local Portland Jewish Federation, prominent members. These are folks who put themselves forward as representing the broader Jewish community, who are taking part in this conference, who are essentially taking part in a conference with these representatives from this racist political party in Israel. And I wonder, if I were to take part in a conference where a representative that was speaking on the same panel, for example, that maybe I was speaking, and that representative were to call for the expulsion of the Jews from Palestine, to throw the Jews into the sea, how I would be characterized in the local media, for example, taking part in a conference like that. And yet, just as I say, we have prominent leaders from the Jewish Federation here in Portland taking part in this conference. How should we think about that sort of incident?
It is rather disturbing. I mean, I would assume that virtually no one in the leadership of the Jewish community in Portland actually agrees with that kind of perspective. But at the same time, you know, the fact that they're willing to share a podium, to be at a conference that includes people like that, it is rather disturbing, and something that I think needs to be addressed. They need to be held accountable for, and to explain why they are willing to take part in such a gathering, and to give them an opportunity to separate themselves from that kind of ideology.
We are speaking with Professor Stephen Zunis of the University of San Francisco, and you're tuned to KBOO, listener-sponsored community radio, 90.7 FM in Portland, and in Corvallis at 100.7 FM, and in the Columbia Gorge at 91.9 FM. And we're back live in the studio. Again, this is your host, Will Seaman. Unfortunately, Hala Goris is not with us today, but she'll be back for our June program on the fourth Friday, June 22nd at 9 a.m. for One Land, Many Voices. And we're going to continue with that Stephen Zunis interview in a moment. We're going to go back to it for the conclusion of that interview with Stephen Zunis. But I want to mention that coming up here in a few moments after that interview, we're very fortunate to have speaking live with us
Zaha Hassan, who is a local attorney who's been very active on this issue for many, many years, active locally but also active internationally in this struggle for a just peace in Israel-Palestine. She's going to be talking with us by telephone soon about these upcoming events, and in particular about something called the 40-60 campaign, which we're going to talk about. We're also going to talk about events happening. I'm going to just mention a couple of them. Of course, we've been talking about this Convergence Northwest Conference happening over in Vancouver, June 5th, 6th, 7th, and there are plans for protests, for some educational activity, in a sense, to provide a different perspective, both for the participants in the conference and other folks who hopefully will see these folks. And that's happening June 5th, for example, from 11 to 2 p.m. Out on the sidewalk in front of the Hilton Hotel where this this conference is taking place. And then, too, on June 6th from 5 to 8 p.m., there'll be a memorial vigil at Esther Short Park, and they'll be reading the names at that vigil of the 1,045 Palestinian and Israeli children killed from September 2000 to March 2007. And then on June 7th, from 7:30 to 11 a.m., again, sidewalk signs outside of the entrance of this Hilton Hotel where this Convergence Northwest Conference is taking place. And I'll mention just one other event before we go back to the conclusion of this interview, and that is that on June 22nd, Rashid Khalidi, who is professor of Arab Studies, director of the Middle East Institute at Columbia University, I think I'm pretty sure that he occupies the Edward Said Chair in Arab Studies at Columbia University. Rashid Khalidi, author of The Iron Cage, The Story of the Palestinian Struggle for Statehood, he is going to be speaking here in Portland on June 22nd. We'll talk a little bit June 23rd. We'll talk a little bit more about that. That's at 2 p.m. June 23rd, Saturday, at Portland State University, Hoffman Hall. We'll talk a little bit more about that as soon as we get Zaha Hassan on the line, and she'll be here in a few moments. I want to make sure that you also know that you can participate in this discussion at 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. Hopefully we'll have time to take some calls. We'll be returning in a moment, and now we'll go to the conclusion of Stephen Zunis' interview. Professor Zunis, I know you're busy. You're heading out of the country this later today. But are there other elements of the current situation in Israel-Palestine? Of course, we've been hearing of the escalation of violence in Gaza. Are there other elements of how things are evolving there that you think our listeners need to be aware of?
I think the underlying thing to remember is that the peace process has essentially been frozen since Ariel Sharon and George W. Bush came to power in early 2001. And that the lack of a peace process is what has led to the rise of Hamas and the violence and other problems that we've been seeing on the Palestinian side, that the majority of Palestinians, including President Mahmoud Abbas, are willing to sign a peace agreement with Israel, which would give full security guarantees to Israel, break up the militias and terrorist groups and the like, and to have full normal relations in return for Israel withdrawing from the territory seized in the 1967 war with perhaps some minor and reciprocal border adjustments. And the U.S. and Israeli position has been to reject that and to instead argue that Israel has a right to annex large swaths of territory in the West Bank in order to incorporate these illegal settlements into Israel, settlements which are a violation of both the Fourth Geneva Convention and a series of UN Security Council resolutions. No country can move its civilian population onto occupied territory like that. And what it comes down to is that basically the Palestinians' negotiating position has actually been far more moderate, far more consistent with international law, far more consistent with the positions of America's democratic allies around the world, than has been the U.S. or Israeli position, and that peace is really not that difficult. The majority of Israelis appear to be open to such a two-state solution as I described as well. But the Bush administration, ironically, with support of both Republicans and Democrats in Congress, have essentially gone to support Olmert's annexationist agenda and has undermined the moderate Palestinians and moderate Israelis who've been trying to work for some kind of a settlement the Geneva Initiative, which was an effort by moderates of both sides to put up a draft agreement that was signed in December 2003, was essentially ignored by Congress and the administration. Instead, they put their full support behind the Sharon-Olmert Convergence Plan, where they basically unilaterally withdraw from certain populated Palestinian areas while annexing the land in such a way that the remaining Palestinian parts end up being a series of non-contiguous cantons, which are economically inviable, and basically make a Palestinian state, which is necessary for a peace settlement, impossible. So I think we really need to pressure members of Congress to insist that the Bush administration support something along the lines of the Geneva Initiative or other efforts by the moderates of both sides, instead of giving a carte blanche to the Israeli government and putting all the blame incorrectly on the Palestinian side for the current impasse.
And you've been listening to a KBOO Public Affairs special feature focus on Palestine-Israel. Our guest has been University of San Francisco Professor of Politics Stephen Zunis. Stephen, thank you very much for joining us today.
My pleasure.
And we're back in the studio live, and we have on the telephone Ms. Zaha Hassan. She has been active with the National Lawyers Guild, co-authoring, for example, an important report documenting the U.S. role in facilitating Israel's illegal occupation of Palestinian land. She was also involved in the NLG's brief challenging Israel's policy of assassinations of Palestinians, and more recently in challenging the Bush administration's attacks on civil liberties here in the U.S. Zaha, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you for having me. Good morning.
Good morning. And let's start, if we could, with the 40-60 campaign. I know some people have heard about this, but could you explain to our listeners the significance of the 40-60 campaign, 40-60, those numbers, and how the campaign has emerged from Palestinian civil society within the occupied territories?
Right. Well, the 40-60 campaign is a child of the 40-60 committee, which is a committee of Americans United for Palestinian Human Rights. For those of you who don't know, AUPHR is a grassroots organization in the Portland area, founded in October 2000 after Ariel Sharon's provocative visit to the Haram al-Sharif mosque compound with Israeli forces in tow. It was founded by concerned citizens who want to see U.S. foreign policy in the Middle East reflect our obligations under international law and human rights standards embodied in international conventions and in U.S. law. This committee really is responding to a call to action that was made by Palestinian civil society. And what the call to action is a call to commemorate the 40th anniversary of the Israeli occupation, which will take place this year, June 7th, and the 60th anniversary of the Palestinian dispossession known as the Palestinian Nakba, or catastrophe, which will be commemorated in May 2008. What the committee is planning is a year-long series of events and actions. And the reason why the 40-60 commemorations are so important is because this is this may be the last generation of Palestinians, Palestinian refugees, who've eyewitnessed the Palestinian catastrophe. From 47, 48, that population is elderly and won't be around for much longer. So we are really interested in preserving their collective memory and doing so all over the world where Palestinian refugees are located. Benchmarks like the 40th and the 60th anniversary also present for us as human rights activists a teachable moment to be able to mobilize interest in the Palestine-Israel conflict. But most critical for us is that the year 2008 is really important in Palestinian history and the struggle for freedom against apartheid, because Israel will have virtually completed its apartheid wall in the West Bank. There's already a wall or fence around Gaza, but it will have really completed its physical control over large portions of the West Bank. And 2008 is also a presidential election, and Israeli officials have indicated that they are set on trying to complete their physical control over the borders that they want to have in the West Bank before George Bush leaves office. And they hope to announce in 2008 a unilateral withdrawal, and I put that in quotes, from the West Bank as they did in Gaza. But we all know that there really was no true withdrawal or end to the occupation in Gaza. All there was a redeployment of troops and a siege over Gaza, and the same will take place in the West Bank. But Israel will be able to announce this unilateral withdrawal sort of out of the goodness of their hearts is the way it's going to be presented. But in reality, it will just be a continuation of control over the West Bank.
I wonder if we could talk about a little bit more about this one event that a lot of work is going into, and that is the lecture, but also other activities around a lecture by Rashid Khalidi. Can you talk a little bit about what's planned for that event?
Right. Well, the launch of the 40-60 campaign in the Portland area will be officially on June 23rd at PSU's Hoffman Hall, and there we're planning a day-long series of educational and cultural programming, where we will also have a photo exhibit provided by Friends of Sabeel on display, which are photos of the Palestinian Nakba, or Palestinian dispossession. These are photos collected by the United Nations Relief and Works Agency that sort of document the Palestinians during the ethnic cleansing of what became Israel. The day will culminate with a lecture by Dr. Rashid Khalidi of Columbia University, who you talked about earlier. He's a renowned expert on Palestinian history, Palestinian identity, and politics. His latest book, The Iron Cage, will be made available that day, and people will be able to get their book signed by Dr. Khalidi. The activities for the remainder of 2007 and 2008 will be announced periodically on AUPHR's website, which is www.auphr.org. But Portland in June will be the epicenter of much Palestine-Israel-related activities and events, both coming from the peace and justice community and from the pro-occupation, pro-Palestinian dispossession side of the equation. June 3rd, there's going to be an APAC conference in Portland. APAC is the American-Israeli Public Affairs Committee, and that conference is 5 to 8 p.m. June 3rd at the Portland Hilton in downtown Portland. APAC was founded to influence elected officials and policymakers in blindly supporting Israeli policies such as the occupation and control over Palestinian land and settlement construction. So APAC is basically an organization working for the interests of a foreign government. AUPHR has been asking people to go and stand and witness in what I would call the walk of shame as our elected officials enter the conference like dutiful children. Governor Ted Kulongowski has been quoted as saying that support for APAC is an article of faith for both political parties. I would have hoped that working for respect for internationally recognized human rights and international law would be an article of faith for both political parties, not the subjugation of the interests of the U.S. to the avarice of a foreign government, here Israel. So anyone who would like to attend, at least just to watch and see which of our elected officials plan on being there. There are many, both state and local politicians in our community that have taken part in APAC-sponsored trips to Israel. These trips are completely one-sided and present Israel as a beleaguered, nation surrounded by, warmongering Arabs, and doesn't at all show the occupation or Palestinians and the suffering that Palestinians have been going through for the last 40 years in the West Bank and Gaza, and more broadly speaking, since the dispossession of Palestinians. The APAC conference is really aimed at, again, as you described, with the Northwest Convergence conference is really aimed at influencing elected officials, inviting them into the conference, and, you know, sort of wining and dining them without any sort of discussion of what might be in the long-term best interest of Israel, which is to make peace with the Palestinians. So
that's June 3rd. And where is that? And what time is that that we could witness this walk of shame?
This is going to be at the Portland Hilton in downtown between 5 and 8 p.m. That's when the conference is taking place.
Now, this is an AIPAC conference or a benefit dinner? I may have been confused about that. It's actually an actual conference.
Well, it may be actually a benefit dinner. I think I may be using the term conference broadly, but...
Well, it certainly seems that these two events coming so close together, June 3rd and then this Convergence Northwest Conference, June 5th, 6th and 7th over in Vancouver. I mean, it is, for me at least, does seem somewhat unprecedented. We have had, of course, very right-wing speakers on this issue come to Portland, but to have the AIPAC event and this Convergence Northwest happening in the region, first of all, we shouldn't miss it. We shouldn't miss this opportunity to raise our voices against this particular vision for the region that's represented by AIPAC and this Convergence Northwest conference. So that's June 3rd, and again, that's the Hilton downtown Portland?
Right. And, I would just point out about the June 7th and 8th Northwest Convergence Conference, that this is really an event that has been planned and has been put, a lot of money and planning has been put into this event. I mean, there's a marketing firm, I think it's called Emprian, that's been hired by Israeli Knesset members to sell the conference to the public. And the stated goal of the marketing firm on their website is to have their clients, the Israeli Knesset members, make contacts with local political and religious leaders in Oregon and Washington. So, as a part of this marketing plan, they've mailed out free books to invitees. The book is called Islamic Imperialism. And, it's a really insidious agenda that I don't think those of us who are interested in human rights-centered approach to foreign policy in the Middle East should pass up on in terms of letting our elected officials know how we feel. To his credit, will be one of the state reps who's organizing this event, the Northwest Convergence Conference, Representative Zarelli, who's a Republican out of the Vancouver area, he's agreed to meet with his constituents and other clergy in Portland and Vancouver to discuss the purpose behind his organizing this this event. So we will see next week after our meeting with Representative Zarelli exactly why he felt the need to organize this type of conference. Again, that's the 7th and 8th of June at the Washington Hilton, this Vancouver Washington Hilton.
And I just need to mention that coming up at 10 this morning, we're going to be hearing a conversation between two writers, Michael Pollan and Wendell Berry. And then at 10:30 here on KBOO, Boneheads and Bigots with Pat McGuire. And at 11, of course, it's Democracy Now! Hear the story of Major General John Batiste, who was offered a promotion to become a 3-star general, the second highest ranking military officer in Iraq. And instead, he quit over the war. And after he appeared in a commercial for VoteVets.org, CBS News fired him as a paid news consultant. And that's at 11 this morning in about an hour and 15 minutes on Democracy Now! Here on KBOO. And we're speaking with Zaha Hassan about various local events taking place around the 40-60 campaign. You know, I was at the U.S. Campaign to End the Israeli Occupation website, which is endtheoccupation.org. I highly recommend a visit to that website. And they do have an account of our local representatives. And it is interesting to note that Senator Smith was, they single out senators and representatives as being the best and the worst. And Senator Smith ranked among the worst in terms of his votes on the issues on legislation having to do with the Israel-Palestine conflict. What has your experience been trying to work with Senator Smith or Senator Wyden or the other representatives from the Northwest?
Well, it's funny. Senator Smith is known in the pro-occupation, pro-Palestinian dispossession camp as the best friend of Israel. So it's you know, you can see the difference between the two points of view. He, you know, Senator Smith seems to have close ties to former Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, and he's I think the Israeli official that's called Senator Smith the best friend that Israel has in the Senate. So there apparently is very close relations there. And, you know, Senator Smith I've attempted to meet with multiple times. I have not been able to meet with him personally, though I've met with his foreign policy aide in Washington, D.C., and had really the most, I don't know,
unpleasant
meeting that I've ever had with an elected, you know, well, the staff of an elected official. I mean, it was as though I was entering the office of an Israeli prime minister rather than an American elected official. I was not greeted very warmly. The first thing that came out of the staff member's mouth was like, you know, how dare I come here to Senator Smith's office to complain about Israel? You know, why am I not complaining about the activities of, say, Saudi Arabia or Egypt or Jordan? And I'm, you know, my response was, you know, those are all allies of the U.S. If you have a problem with them, then you should be doing something about that. But I was there as a representative of human rights organizations like the National Lawyers Guild and Americans United for Palestinian Human Rights, and I was there talking about USAID to Israel, which we send over $3 billion a year without any oversight whatsoever. There is no oversight to the cash money that we send to Israel, while with aid that we have sent to Palestinians, though we send none at the moment, but the aid that we have sent to the Palestinians goes through USAID, an agency of the U.S. government, which tracks, you know, every dollar that gets spent, U.S. dollars that gets spent by the Palestinians. We don't have a similar system for money that we send to Israel. So my question was to Senator Smith's staff was, why not? Considering it's $3 billion, wouldn't we like to make sure that that money that is fungible is not being used to expand settlements in the West Bank, which is against international law and stated U.S. policy? And, you know, the staff there didn't want to hear any of that. So I haven't had a very warm reception by Senator Smith, and I have also been unable to meet with Senator Wyden. He just refuses to meet with anyone coming from an international human rights-centered approach to the Palestine-Israel conflict. I've met repeatedly with staff both in Washington, D.C. and in Oregon, but he has never agreed to meet with his constituents. And we've tried to make, you know, we've had delegations, 10 to 20 people, write letters to him asking for meetings, and he's refused to have anything to do with us, though, again, his staff did meet with us, so.
And there is actually, as a part of the mobilization that's happening in Washington, D.C., and I want to mention, for those of us who can't make it to Washington, D.C. on June 10th, for this U.S. campaign to end the occupation, which is also sponsored and endorsed by dozens and dozens of other peace groups, including United for Peace and Justice. For those who can't make it to Washington, D.C., locally on Sunday, June 10th at 12 p.m. noon at Holiday Park, that's at Northeast 11th Avenue and Holiday Street, just south of the Lloyd Mall, there in a beautiful Holiday Park by the MAX station, there will be an event kicking off or marking this very important anniversary, this tragic anniversary of the beginning of the 40-year anniversary of the West Bank, Gaza, and East Jerusalem. And again, that's Sunday, June 10th at 12 noon at Holiday Park, Northeast 11th Avenue and Holiday Street here in Portland. I hope folks have a pen and some paper and are writing down all of these events that are happening locally. You know, a part of the Washington mobilization is actually, there is the mobilization itself on June 10th, but another mobilization happens on June 11th, and that's the lobbying part, the grassroots lobbying day that's happening on June 11th in Washington, D.C., and we locally can be a part of that campaign, of course, simply by picking up the telephone and calling our representative, calling up Senator Wyden, Senator Smith, Representative Blumenauer, Representative Hooley, Representative Wu, Representative DeFazio, and Representative Walden, our Oregon delegation, and making sure that they know that the path to peace has to be through justice for the Palestinian people, that the interests of the Israelis and the Palestinians alike is not in consolidating this illegal occupation that we are marking the 40th anniversary at the beginning of June, but rather with a new path. Zaha, what has your experience been in lobbying other members of our delegation? And lobbying, I think, is maybe misleading, essentially communicating to them the views of a very good percentage of the American people that contrast so sharply with the policies of our government.
Well, just to reiterate what you were saying about encouraging people to phone in or email or, you know, however, fax, whatever you can do to communicate to your elected officials about on the day of action, the 11th. I really encourage that as well. When I've gone to visit in Washington, D.C., various offices of the Oregon delegation, I would, you know, have informal conversations with staff members that were sympathetic. In the cafeteria where all true, information is shared and, you know, without any kind of fear, you know, that's where it all happens. And there, you know, with the staff members, I found that, you know, they were saying to me, you know, you guys just need to be more organized about what you do. You know, they say when something happens in Israel or Palestine, we get just bombarded with letters from, you know, AIPAC-affiliated people, and they have their party line down, and or they will send us briefing papers telling us, you know, how we should be thinking about a resolution that may be coming up or how we should be sponsoring a resolution. He said that they're just so well organized. And what he sees from the peace and justice community, at least this one staff member I talked to, was that, you know, it'll happen in spurts, but it's not consistent and it's not regular enough and it's not coordinated enough. And this particular staff member felt like we would have a much better reaction from the official he works for if we could pull that off with more regularity and consistency. So I really encourage people to take part when you get when you hear about activities, lobbying activities of the U.S. campaign or AUPHR, to really to take part in that. It does have an impact, but we have to do it regularly and together to really have a strong effect. I think, you know, all in all, if you look at the U.S. campaign's website and theoccupation.org, where they have a rundown of the record, the congressional scorecard for our Oregon representatives, you'll find that we're actually a much better, at least our congresspersons are much better on record than most places in the U.S., even, you know, Representative Blumenauer, Representative DeFazio have been good generally, though not as good as we'd like to see them. We have a lot of work to do with Representative Wu. We have a lot of work to do with Representative Hooley, who, while all the other representatives have met with people from the peace and justice community and human rights community, Representative Hooley has not agreed to meet with us. I don't know why that's the case, but I think she needs to hear from more and more of her constituents to let her know that that viewpoint is important, and she needs to take a look at Palestinian human rights.
I'm going to take we have a couple callers. I think I'm going to try to sneak in one caller. And I do apologize, but we've got a lot to cover today. Caller, you're on the air.
Hi. I'm probably typical of a lot of Americans who for years just accepted the notion that Israel and the United States had this special convergence of interests and a natural alliance and the idea that we had a special friendship. And recently, or as I've learned more about the situation, I understand what the United States has done for Israel in terms of billions of dollars and not forcing Israel to abide by international agreements. But I can't figure out what Israel has done for the United States. What's Israel's part of this special friendship? Could someone comment on that?
Zaha, do you want to try to address that question? And we only have just a few minutes left here, and I do want to mention before we go off the air the other events. But Zaha, would you like to respond?
Yes, I think early on the prevailing wisdom was that Israel was going to be, you know, our proxy nation in the Middle East, fighting off communism or the spread of communism in the Middle East. That was sort of our initial reason for supporting Israel. Later on, that changed as the perceived threat changed to U.S. interests, and now the perceived threat is Islam, and it's a very manufactured view, but it's gained a lot of mileage after September 11th, and a lot of groups have capitalized on that, on the fear that's present now in the U.S. about Islamic fundamentalism and the Islamic threat to U.S. interests. And so Israel is now seen as sort of, you know, this fortress that's going to fight off the spread of that, when in fact, you know, really, as Professor Zun has pointed out, you know, it's this prolonged and persistent Israeli occupation that is the most, that has created and promoted a lot of the fundamentalist thinking that's taking place in the Middle East now. So it's really, it's a very misguided understanding of how, of U.S. national interests, but it unfortunately, you know, that is the basis for a lot of what we're doing now with Israel.
And we're going to have to wrap up very quickly. Caller two, I think we have another call. I'm going to very quickly a comment, and then we're going to wrap up.
Yeah, I think it's telling that you brought up 9/11 because what the peace and justice movement really should do, in my opinion, is to give more credence to the whole notion of false flag terrorism. We know the history of Zionism and the Mossad, and this is something that distorts everything so totally that it's impossible to get a realistic perspective on geopolitical situation unless you understand the strategy of tension, and the whole history of false flag terrorism.
All right, thank you very much for that comment. I want to thank Zaha Hassan. Thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you, and thank you to all of our listeners. I want to mention again that June 10th, Sunday, June 10th at 12 p.m. noon, Holiday Park. This is, again, the kickoff of the 40, not the kickoff, but it's a major event around the 4060 campaign. The world says no to Israeli occupation. There are the protests June 5th, 6th, and 7th in Vancouver at the Convergence Northwest Conference. And, of course, there's Rashid Khalidi, who is speaking on June 23rd, Saturday, June 23rd. It's almost a full day of events at Portland State University, Hoffman Hall. You can go to offer.org, that's AUPHR.org, for additional details. Thank you very much for tuning in, everybody, and we'll see you next month for One Land, Many Voices. Thank you.